It's been too long.
It has been too long. Welcome back, guys.
My goodness.
Welcome back.
What do we do? We just replayed old episodes. Is that what we did?
Where you been, Arun? We've been sitting here without you.
I've actually been here. It's been every Wednesday.
You're sitting in the studio just waiting for someone to talk to you. Yeah.
That's so sad. But this is my life. This is my life.
This is his marriage. Just waiting. Where's Shilps? Shilpa,
good.
You talk to me. I'm home. She's like, not now. You had your 10 minutes.
All right. This is too real. Too real. Let's get started with the pod.
Let's go.
So where you guys been up to? What have you guys been doing?
Yeah, Vance, what have you been up to?
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot going on. It's exciting because we are 1 week away from FlowCon.
FlowCon.
Look at that. Straight into marketing.
Just can't turn it off. This is good.
Can't turn it off.
No, we've been pressing hard. We've been doing a lot of traveling.
We're in Colorado.
We were in Colorado together.
So good.
That was a great experience being with Kingdom Builders and, talking a lot of Kingdom expansion, so that was fun. In between there's been a few different trips that we've been doing separately regarding ministry, business, a bit of both, actually. You've been doing a lot of ministry and business.
Yeah.
Pushing overflow, preaching in churches. Can we talk about Generosity University, or we can't talk about that yet?
Yeah, no, we can talk about it. Yeah. I mean, I've been on a little bit of a stint piloting, and we're going to take it to full launch later this summer, this concept that we've coined Generosity University. What we found is that, you know, in churches, there are these different financial literacy programs. I'm not going to name names, but people like Dave Ramsey that have created programs like Financial Peace University. And mad respect for Dave Ramsey in terms of the environment today, kind of the GOAT, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of providing tools like Debt Snowball. I think he's gotten literally hundreds of thousands of people out of debt through these programs. It's fantastic. But I do think that there is a fresh wind that the Holy Spirit's trying to bring in this space. And we hope to be able to provide it in the sense of, at the end of the day, millennials don't want to live by envelope. Millennials, I don't even think, get motivated by saying spend less. But millennials do get motivated by how to make more.
Sure.
Said every Instagram hustler influencer, right? That is trying to, you know, sling a get rich quick scheme. And that's not what we're trying to do. But what we're trying to do is give tools around investment, give tools around, everybody's got a side hustle. How do you do that effectively? Right? Give tools about how to think about these things. Yes, there is an element of stewardship that is biblical, but the parable of the talents tells us that there's also an element of investment.
Right, yeah.
And so how do you invest in yourself? How do you create portfolios? How do you create products? How do you create an ecosystem where you can actually not just make money for you and your family, but make money so that you can live big and give big? And so that's what we call Generosity University. It seems to be resonating. I've been in churches in Miami, Orlando, even New Jersey, the armpit of America. That's what they told me, the armpit of America. And this is really resonating with people, especially with the next gen.
Yeah, I think there's an orientation around a lot of the financial education that's out there that is really about your goal is survival. Cut up your credit cards, get out of debt. And it seems to be like, how can you just survive in life?
Right.
Whereas what if you set the bullseye as how much you want to give? What if you started with generosity as the goal and then you can backfill to get to that place? And I think it's that idea rule to give big, I got to live with a bigger mentality. I got to expand that. And so I think that it's definitely an offensive play rather than a defensive play.
And isn't it funny? We've been talking to pastors actually, even when we were in Colorado, talking about this concept and asking them what they use in their churches. They're like, we use Financial Peace University. And they were like, well, do you know that that's anti getting a mortgage? Do you have a mortgage?
It's anti-debt.
And they're like, oh, that's what it teaches? They don't even know.
You know, it's crazy how many pastors permit something they don't even know what's being taught. And it's like, whoa. That's a little bit scary.
It's really interesting because, like, my mom is a big believer in that. But, like, I think about, like, first generation, at least for my family that came here, they kind of were in that survival mode. So this is kind of an interesting play on now second generation
who can
kind of grow it. So.
Yeah.
But also in our parents' or grandparents' generation, a house in Santa Clara was $75,000.
Right.
Now it's $7.5 million. So it's like,
when you say she's a big believer in that, is she a believer in the no credit card, live out of the envelope thing?
Yep.
And I think I think that's probably a very smart and responsible way if you aren't, you know, very well managed with your finances, mm-hmm, right? Like right. if you're not if you don't have a clear budget to make sure you don't go into interest payments, all that kind of stuff. But right. I mean, with emergence of the points guy and some of the attractive mm-hmm. elements that you can leverage off a credit card, I mean, you can literally get whole free vacations. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there is I think it just needs an education is what we're talking 100% about.
100% agree. I think even our generation is still slow to learn all this. Like there's a segment of people that understand it and take advantage of it. But if you don't, you're really just falling behind and further falling behind because... So what does this look like practically for Generosity? Is it going to be an in-person thing, an online kind of content?
Yeah, I mean, I've been piloting it in person, okay. So that's been fun, just getting real-time feedback. Nice. And we are actually literally in the process of recording the modules. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be an accompanying digital workbook with it. And it's basically going to be a product, a platform, a service that can be, you know, given to churches to then teach their people. Right. And that's so awesome. Coming soon. Oh, in a few months, yeah.
That's incredible. And then also, just want to make sure we touched on it, your Series B closed. Yes, congratulations.
That's right. That's huge. It's public. Actually, the news dropped here before anyone else. You gotta subscribe to the Hype Pod.
Exclusives.
The exclusives here.
How's it been? It's obviously incredible news, but now it's... I think I asked Pastor Kim, like, congratulations. She's like, yeah, now the work begins. These are just steps to, like, the next... goals.
You know, it's a funny thing. Like, you know, you announce this, it's very exciting. There's so many people that are encouraging. There's so many people that are now just learning and being more aware about what we're doing. Cause in our Business Wire announcement, and then Axios broke the news and all that type of stuff, we shared a little bit about the future roadmap and things like that. So people are cluing on to even the future vision. But then I've gotten 10x spam.
Yeah. Mm. Right.
On my phone.
Sure.
In my email. I'm like, how? And it's like, because everybody thinks you have money now. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm not spending it on your stupid company. And so it's just like, because these cold outbound emails are not even intentional. Mm-hmm. They're like, hi, first name. We saw you. And it's like, terrible.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a funny thing. But we're feeling blessed.
Grifters.
We're really excited that everything's public because I do believe that extra sense of credibility towards, you know, WIF, they got a big balance sheet mm-hmm. backing us, gives people more opportunity to not just learn about what we're doing, but really partner with what we're doing with greater confidence. So it's fun.
That's awesome. Incredible. And so this podcast is kind of open. We've been gone for 3 weeks, I think, now. So there's a lot that's happened over
way
the last
too
month.
Long.
So I want to kind of open it up to, this is like the week before, this pod will drop right before FlowCon. So this pod will drop.
Oh, let's go.
Leading into FlowCon. So
great timing.
This is going to be a fun one. So I'm going to give you guys some topics. You guys pick which one you want to talk about. And then we'll just go from there.
An adventure.
But I think the first one, before I let you pick, it has to be the Apple Vision Pro.
Oh,
because
yes.
I thought I was seeing all of what it looks like to be, you know, in the Silicon Valley. I saw somebody get out of a Cybertruck with the Apple Vision Pro on. And then I come to church and Pastor Adam is giving a sermon with the Apple Vision Pro. I'm like, okay, yeah, now I'm fully in it.
Now you're in the Silicon Valley.
Now I'm in the Silicon Valley.
Now this is what it looks like to be a Christian in the Silicon Valley. Move over influencers. All right. We are preaching with the Apple Vision Pro. No, it actually just happened. So that last week I was with some friends and we were doing ski week. We were up in Tahoe, and I was with some friends, and they had just got the Apple Vision Pro. Mm. And I was like, oh, cool. I'd love to give it a try. And I literally was blown away.
It's pretty good.
I didn't enter correctly. I didn't have the expectation, but I got sucked into the vortex of the immersive experience, and they were recording my reaction. I don't know what for, but they're recording my reaction because I think everybody has a similar reaction. Mm-hmm. It's like literally mind blowing. And so as I was doing it, I was also percolating all week on, you know, the final installment in our Holy Spirit school. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like it sounds funny, but a Holy Spirit moment that this is what it's like to put on an advantage. Mm. Like to be able to, the things I was seeing and the features I was seeing that nobody else could see, but it was like a peripheral to mm-hmm. what I had. And I'm interacting with people, and yet I could have something playing in the background. I could have a scripture up live.
Brilliant.
And literally just to be able to, as we're talking, I was pulling up a verse.
Yeah,
and I thought, this is just like that advantage of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I thought, hey, that'd be crazy. What if we could just do that illustration live? And it was super Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
But I think it really, it wasn't like, hey, let's find a way to work the Vision Pro into a sermon.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
It kind of fit, like, naturally. It was it felt like the logical next place to go when you're trying to...
The timing was just outstanding. Yeah. And I don't, you know, sometimes we plan a whole series out and we'll really map it out. But then sometimes you just pivot for what's in the moment and the way that God speaks, especially in the Holy Spirit, you know, series. And that just fit so well. And I think it was a really great analogy for what it looks like to put on, you know, power.
I mean, the fruit of it was powerful. Yeah. Second service, there were dozens and dozens of people.
Oh, yeah.
Not just responding, but like you could see having deep ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That analogy really allowed them to contextualize, oh, that's what it means. I haven't put on the power.
Yeah.
And people were crying. People were getting ministry. It was beautiful.
Yeah. But have you tried?
I have not. That's what I was going to ask you guys.
Oh, next week you get to try it at FloCon.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a FloCon.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. Well, let's edit that out of the podcast.
Time has finally come to reveal.
We're going to be there. Like, where's our room? Yeah. Where's our guy?
It's very unfortunate news. I would like to sponsor somebody's ticket because, you know, I can't go. Somebody else wants to go. But I won't be there, so I'm really bummed.
Shilpa won't let you go?
No. That would be really funny if she just, this is her, this line, you can't go to FloCon. But I'll be at engineering offsite, so.
Oh, yeah, those Silicon Valley things.
Yeah,
those
offsites. Just continuing down the road.
Those offsites. Those excuses
not to
work.
A really tough life in Palo Alto.
Yeah. It's in Vegas too, right? I'm really going to be working hard. But how's it been? How was the comfort? Was it something you guys could see yourself using long term?
Look, it's still a bit heavy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest with you. I think, you know, if you have it on for an hour, it comes with the additional head strap, which I think helps alleviate the frontal lobe pressure. It's definitely something that is so immersive that you're lost in it. Mm-hmm. But after a while, I think on the bridge of the nose, you're definitely going to feel the weight. And I'm sure by, you know, second iteration, third iteration of this product, it's going to be really in the pocket.
Yeah.
But I think just to get it into the market, they've done a fantastic job. It's extremely comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, just for user experience, it probably takes a quick little learning curve, but maybe after two or three
times. Really intuitive.
Yeah.
Dude, it looked intuitive. Very intuitive. When you were using it on stage, both of you guys, I saw your clip of you prepping it before. Yeah. But everything, usually when you do a tech demo in general, it's usually like you're retrying stuff. Right. You're like
going. No, it's very intuitive.
Everything you guys were doing, it looked very smooth. So I was really impressed by the demo.
I think design wise, Steve Jobs is probably rolling in his grave with the battery pack. That's really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel very Apple-esque, that extra battery pack. I do think that they did it so that they can have super high-quality immersive imagery on there to power it, to my understanding. But that is a little bit clunky. Outside of that, I mean, it is heavy, but I do think that top strap will help a ton. It's not as heavy as you'd think, though.
It looks heavy.
Yeah, it does look
heavier than it is. Like, it's a surprise. Oh, that's not so heavy. Okay. But I think anything sitting on the bridge of your nose for a while. Like, your glasses probably get a little annoying after a while.
I feel like this is, like, not the era for me. I'm going to have to, like, wear contacts permanently because I've tried the other versions and it's just impossible.
Not with glasses on.
Yeah, not with glasses. So either that or I'm going to get smaller glasses. I don't know. But, yeah, I think it's not for me, maybe.
Right.
The current version of it.
Can you get prescription Vision Pro?
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
That is really interesting.
Like built-in enhancement.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a pass-through. Yeah, they should be able to.
Yeah, maybe there's a magnification element. You won't need glasses.
Apple, if you're listening.
Or this is just natural selection.
All right, let's talk about it then. We got to talk about it then. Because when we previously talked about Neuralink, Pastor Adam said, I'm not going to be the first one to get it. Put me up against
him. Put me against him.
But now that you've had this kind of revelation of, like, you know,
the human enhancements.
Yeah, let's put this on and then we can work with it. Does this change your mind?
It doesn't change my mind. I thought it was because my whole point with the Vision Pro is I don't need it. I got the Holy Spirit, right? Like, you know, that's doing the same thing. And I think, you know, the Neuralink is, I feel like we have that as believers. I don't really know what it's like too deeply to not be a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived my whole life with this sense of God and this sense of the Holy Spirit speaking and illuminating. And so I know my natural state is just awareness of some spiritual forces, some discernment, maybe some prophetic edge.
Right.
And so my normal, I know that I've spoken to people who have come into a relationship with Christ and they've experienced the feeling of the Holy Spirit as like, man, light switch is on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's how I live. Mm-hmm. That's what I live with. And so I think, you know, I would love to try out my spiritual superpower against someone's Neuralink superpower. That's what.
Ooh,
that's what I like to try.
Because I don't know if Pastor Adam sent me this news reporting of Peter Thiel is trying to do enhanced games. So basically, there's like no rules in terms of what you can do to enhance your body. Mostly talking about probably like performance enhancing drugs. Yeah. But there's like obviously this aspect of it, of like a BCI, like a brain computer interface that you're, you know, enhances your cognition or whatever the end result of this looks like.
Because we're at the point of diminishing returns in the athletic arena.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All right. So we're right at the cusp. Like we're making milliseconds as a world record mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. I think what Peter Thiel is talking about is what if we just let's throw off the gates. Mm-hmm. Let's mm-hmm. throw off the boundaries. Let's do performance enhancing drugs. Let's do Neuralinks. And let's just see a race of superhumans that could change sport, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, the only fairness is your advantage.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And I feel like there's, I mean, you, to play the game, you have to play the game, right? Like you have to play right. by the rules. So I feel like if you're going to do this, you, and you might
many,
be in a world.
How many, where you need it. How many people do you think would go straight for that?
Mm. A lot.
A lot. Yeah.
Right. Because I feel like there's a lot of fighters in that are just like any edge I can get, I'm mm-hmm. on, but they're restricted. And is that funner to watch than
I'd
real
watch
human
it. Yeah,
limitations?
I'd watch it for sure. I would love it. I think you got to think about like the steroid era in baseball. It was just vastly better to watch, right? Like
I don't remember that era.
Oh, really?
I'm not a baseball guy, but tell me about it. I'm very fascinated.
Every hit was a home run.
Every hit was a home run.
Was it really?
Yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah, everybody was on it. Pitchers, batters, everybody. It was just
there was year after year where the home run record just kept getting broken. Yeah. Like it was crazy. It was like,
see, that would be fun, right?
It was so,
I mean, baseball was at its peak.
It was. And now you look at it and it's just like this sport that feels like it's dying away.
Right.
But like you bring this back in, you bring this, cause people want to see action. Right?
Yeah.
You go to go see an action movie. You don't want to, you know, kind of,
yeah, I don't want to watch the same game again.
I mean, at the end of the day, one of the most successful movie franchises in the world is Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, everybody's like, that's so unrealistic, but so cool.
Yeah, that it really is. I feel like it's such a split camp. Either you're like, it's too over the top and you love it, or it's too over the top and you hate it.
I love it.
It's
so good.
I'm on the other end. I'm the opposite to you guys. See, okay. I don't like Marvel because it's just stupid. It's unrealistic. I like the first Fast and the Furious.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it was cars.
From there, they're like, well, how do we flip a car over another car and shoot somebody in the process? Like, if you've ever been in a car that's out of control, you're hanging on for dear life, let alone you're barrel rolling another car and shooting someone in the process.
I feel like you haven't seen the most recent ones when they go into space. I feel like you haven't seen that. Because you're still on the road. You're mad. They just went into space with a car.
It's amazing.
No, it's crazy how that works. But
but you like Marvel, right?
I love it. I remember one time you said you didn't like it during a sermon, and I've never been more crushed in my life.
No, there's a lot of people that hurt their sensitivities, yeah. For sure. It's like, what do you mean you can't just make up superpowers?
Yeah.
No,
I don't know. It's an escape. It's nice. It's nice.
Yeah.
But speaking of things that are also going on in the news, Gemini, Google had a big announcement.
Oh my goodness, the biggest flop in the world.
It was incredible at first. You know, they was going to be the most powerful AI tool out there. Yeah. Google's coming out fast, which is rare for Google. Usually they're like continuing to slow. And then, yeah.
And Elon is loving this moment.
Oh, he's loving it.
Ripping them on Twitter.
You sent me the best meme.
So just for a little context for if you haven't been following along. So Gemini dropped 1.5. And so what happened is people started using it. They started asking it questions and started to notice that it was very politically left-leaning.
Yep.
And then a lot of the stuff that came out was it would start to ask for images of historically accurate white people, and it would generate not white
this
people.
This is crazy.
It's just it insane. Like the founding fathers would ask, who are the founding
fathers? George Washington
and
is
it would just be like an
African.
Indian. Yeah, or an African-American.
Like,
yeah.
What?
And it would just refuse to do it. I think the craziest was it asked Gemini, what was worse? Was it Hitler's contributions or Elon Musk's tweets? And it wouldn't answer it.
Stop it.
No.
Yeah, it would say you have to, you know.
Stop it.
Yeah.
So this is like some mad intentional mm-hmm. programming.
Yeah.
100%. You have to deprogram the internet. Its learning module, its learning language has to almost be off fact
mm-hmm. right.
and history. And you have to intentionally download a different narrative.
Yep.
Literally. Why? Let me ask this question. Why? Why are you that left-leaning that you have to program mm-hmm. and risk your... Like this? Disney did this. Mm-hmm. Disney went woke, go broke, right? So Disney did this woke thing. And here we've got Google who, let's be honest, is... at a real-time risk of not existing in the future.
I mean, the stock is dropping.
Mm-hmm. But it could literally, I mean, you go back 10 years ago, you think, oh, I can't imagine a world without Google. But now that we've got AI, we've got OpenAI, we've got all these options for searching, Google doesn't seem like a product that is going to be around forever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you got extremes, you got maybe moderate views. I think, you know, in extremes, there are questions about, like, you know, intentional diabolical plans, you know, and things like that. You know, spiritually, obviously, there's an element of truth to that. I also think, too, because I used to work at Google, right? I also think there's this phenomena where you get in such an ecosystem and you grow deeper into that bubble that you just become so out of touch. Because I actually have talked to people with a little bit more of this kind of super progressive, what people call woke type of mindset. They don't understand. When you say, oh man, that's pretty woke, to them it's like, wait, that's just the way that we think. You know what I mean? Like, there's almost this, like, a little bit of ignorance of, like, what's wrong with that, you know? But then when it's highlighted to the masses and it's so disconnected from reality and you draw the lines between the bubble and reality, it's like really stark. And it obviously has a visceral reaction in society.
But I'm trying to think of, like, you know, we're speaking to people, we're at Google, they're just down the road.
Yeah.
Right. And these are people that we do life with every day.
Yeah.
They've got kids.
Yeah.
There has got to be is there not a check in your spirit to go, hey, do I really want to rewrite history so that my kids grow up in a false reality? And even on a basic thing, whether you want them to believe a narrative or not, there's basic elements of history that form how you do the future.
100%.
Right? Even comedy and jokes is related to forefathers or something that you need the real context to get the future or the societal ideas. You're dismantling that at a structural level. And there is no guilt within you to go, hey, I'm playing with something really dangerous here by trying to create a false narrative.
I hope there's an awakening of most people at Google, because we know a lot of great people that work at Google that are very reasonably minded and just common sense. So I hope there's a great awakening. And I hope that bubbles up to leadership, because everything rises and falls on leadership at the end of the day. And so whoever was the leader that created the values for their learning principles, not including things like truth in their values, man, somebody needs to be accountable for that.
But I'm asking, what do you guys think is the end goal? What's the motivation?
Like, why did it end up this way?
Because it can't be monetary.
I think it all comes down to money, right? Like, the people that...
But it seems like so anti-monetary because you're guaranteeing to lose money. We know so much now. Go woke, go broke.
Right.
And it's proof, again, it's a major flop. But there has to be the intelligence to go, hey, we don't care about money. We want to. What would be the end goal if it's not money? You think it is?
I think it has to be, because they assume that, like, cancel culture and whatever it is, you have to appease to them because they are, like, the loud minority. And so if they're going off saying, oh, Google is not, you know, adhering to these kind of principles.
So you honestly think that when Disney make those decisions, when Bud Light make their decisions, when Google make their decisions, they think that the few loud voices on internet, because we're going to blame the internet, right? It's the internet that's empowered the loud voice and the radicalist. And what we're seeing right now is middle America go, hey, hang on. No. While you were doing crazy stuff, we didn't care. But now that you're actually starting to create policies, we care. You think they really bought into the fact that it's the few radical loud voices that determine the direction of society?
I don't know if it's so much that as it is BlackRock owns like half of the S&P 500, right? And so BlackRock is part of, like, really inventing and propagating DEI, right? And so if you have one of your major stakeholders that has voting rights, and if they pull their money, can crash your stock, and they're really pushing an agenda for whatever reason, maybe there's other monetary reasons that they're pursuing it, you're going to think twice.
Okay, so you're saying it's money from the funding, not the profitability.
Correct.
Okay, well, that's the orientation that we need to determine here. Because most products are going to be built for profitability.
Right.
Okay, what's the product going to do in the market? So they really care less about how it performs and more about just locking up the funding in the initial investment.
Right.
Okay.
I think that makes sense, because, like you were saying, that those values then come down from leadership, and then that's what create these biases that, you know, your teams build, right? So like everybody's talking about AI is just a product of the creator's bias, right? And that's what we're seeing, right? It's not the information that's out there, because Google has this, all these policies in place to prevent, you know, its AI from producing results that could cause controversy. And essentially that's what led to all this.
So BlackRock has shareholders, right? Mm-hmm. So at what point is making money become no longer the goal? Because they've got so much money.
Mm, exactly.
Is that still the orientation? Hey, we still want you to make returns at obscene amounts, or it's like, cool, just have at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a question. That is a question. Is like, you know, at the end of the day, who's leading these companies? What are the underlying motives? Mm-hmm. And how do those motives influence this downstream effect? Mm-hmm. Where?
See, I think that's how Rome falls.
Mm-hmm.
For I think when sure. we talk about the 100%. Modern Roman empires, BlackRock's an empire, and what happens is they end up falling because they get lost in their agenda, mm-hmm. their motive. They become so wealthy, they start eating like gluttons, and they start, right. you know, taking their eye off, you know, building and progressing. And all it takes is a raiding party to come in with new ideas and new ventures and new motivations.
So good.
And all of a sudden, that whole empire crumbled.
Mm-hmm. So true, huh? I mean, you know, we talk about innovation as one of the underlying themes in this podcast. Mm-hmm. It's actually so important
mm-hmm.
to always have a spirit of innovation, mm-hmm. or it leads to a spirit of deterioration,
yeah.
right? I mean, not even just with companies like BlackRock in the modern day, but institutions like the Catholic Church mm-hmm. in the ancient day,
exactly.
right? That's why cathedrals now are pretty much just museums mm-hmm. because nobody comes to mass.
Correct.
Right.
right? You forgot the people portion mm-hmm. of the equation.
Plus, they don't need people to come to mass.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because they're the biggest real estate company
funded.
In the world. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's like whether anybody shows up, they'll still hold a mass, even if it's for three grandmas in
yep.
the place.
Yep.
Because there's no vision for expansion.
Exactly.
There's no motivation for sustaining, because that can pay the bills.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Is this part of the issue of just getting too big? You just get too big and you can't produce products with the same level of excellence because there just becomes too much noise that enters the equation when you get so big.
I think that's possibly, but I think it comes down to vision.
Mm.
Okay, so you can get big where maybe all your bills are covered and the finances aren't an issue, but what's your motivation? Is it to expand the globe?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? This is why the Great Commission is the greatest mission.
Yes.
Because the commission is go into the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, until there is still people that haven't heard the gospel, our mission isn't done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's about how do we be smart along the process, and how do we actually get to a rate of expansion where we can be more effective. But I think until there is, it's not just about a mission of can we return money to investors, or can we, you know, achieve a certain level of market cap. What we need is we need to keep reaching people.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. In this case, in Google's case, right? There's clearly someone or a team or a whole department that had mission drift. Because
right. mm-hmm.
I remember when I joined Google as a Noogler, Larry Page, the CEO at the time, reminding us the mission of the company, right? To organize the world's information and mm-hmm. to make it universally accessible to all.
So that's a major mission drift then. Because they're not
huge.
Organizing
yeah.
the world's
Heck
information.
No.
It might be like an exact opposite.
Literally the opposite.
It's confused the yeah. world's information.
Yeah. Wow.
Not organized.
Wow. It's literally in opposition to the mission.
How do you think it got Ooh. To that point where it drifted that far without anybody? Because most of those major stakeholders are still the original stakeholders, right?
Well, Larry's not running it. The founder's not running it.
But they're still a part of, you know, making sure this happens. They appointed Sundar to kind of run all that. And you would think that, you know, that mission, at least from that level down, should. But then it's drifted so far that,
yeah.
you know, how does that happen when you're kind of growing, and how do you prevent that from happening? Like now, you know, you're entering Series B, eventually that'll kind of progress as you go on. Are there like things that you're doing to make sure that this doesn't happen for
well,
your companies?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, with anything like crypto, with anything like AI, there's a huge element of hype,
mm-hmm.
right? And this happens in ministry too, where you just start seeing everybody trying to copy the next person that's kind of popping off.
Yeah.
right now, and it comes off so inauthentic that you know that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so there's at a very greater business level, I feel like that's happening here. It's like all these different gold rushes, and we're not actually contextualizing it for, hey, what were we created to do? Mm. What was our mission? What's our unique perspective on this?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're just trying to beat that person. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What's your take?
No, I think mission drift will happen naturally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think you need a constant realignment.
Yeah.
That's why in any company where, as if the founder is not present, constantly reminding of this is what we're doing, here is the target, you will literally just get naturally a mission drift. Mm. People, you'll go to the least resistant pathway. It's so like true. A river. Mm-hmm. But as a visionary or a CEO, your job is to keep the stream running uphill. Mm-hmm. You're going against culture. This is the target. So I'm building banks all the time with cultural statement, vision elements, distinctives. This is what we're doing. We're resurfacing it. We're getting creative. We're putting it on merch. We're putting it in front of people. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it in 1,000 different ways so that it gets into people.
Good.
The moment that stops, you start diluting. Mm. And before you know it, it happens incrementally, but before you know it, you're creating a woke AI and you're actually not just off, you're in reverse. You're now undoing what you've built for the last 20 years.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
And that's literally, if it's that confusing, and the mission of Google has been to organize the world's information, now we're confusing the world's information.
Yeah.
How can we trust the product of Google that if I go to Google to find out about the four founders and I'm getting weird things, well, let me go somewhere else.
Right.
Let me go somewhere accurate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a dangerous place for Google.
Yeah, and I heard this comment that, you know, any press is good press. You know, now people know what Gemini is, they're talking about it. But I don't think that matters. Google doesn't need this kind of press to get their name out. Now, no, like
this
you said,
is bad press.
This is really, when you're that big, now people aren't going to use you. There's other competitors out there. I for one, for sure, I'm just going to go to chat. You know.
Well, that was the comment last week.
Yeah.
So with my friends, and they have an amazing 9-year-old, and he's just one of the most intelligent 9-year-olds ever. I actually love having conversations with him. But one of the things we wanted to find something, he said, I'm just going to pull up ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. He didn't say, let's Google it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember the last time I Googled something.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. His default search engine now is chat.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. So let's chat it. Let's go to chat. I'm like, what's chat? Oh, ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But that was the natural go-to.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already lost the next generation.
Oh, yeah. And I think this is like the issue going into it, right? Google was so they've had this technology just sitting there in their kind of midst, but they were so worried about what it would do to search that they weren't willing to launch it themselves. Yeah. And now OpenAI has like pushed that.
It's a good point, man.
To 100. And now Google's trying to catch up and figure out what can we do. And now this is like.
So where's the failure to launch there? They were sitting on a wealth of...
And they still are. Their tech is incredible. Like, they could still fix this. But we'll see. We'll see. They probably have the best tech out there. Like, they have the best researchers.
I mean, you've
tech.
Seen the text to video, though.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about OpenAI, Sora. That is insane.
That's crazy.
That is really, really insane.
That's just fun.
It is fun. But kind of not, like, scary in a way that I want to scare people off. But it's just so easy now to generate stuff. And you have to be so aware of what you're watching now on the internet.
Yeah.
You have to be, because it could just be fake. It could be completely fake.
I think that's really scary. Like, how do you know what's authentic? How do you know what's generated? Because it is so good.
Yeah.
I think, does it matter?
Did you hear that story about that finance worker that got, so he's working for a company and somebody deepfaked their CFO and got him to pay out 25 mil.
What?
Yeah.
What? Wait, no, tell us the story.
Okay, so yeah, so basically this finance worker was on a series of video calls with the deepfaked version of his CFO and other coworkers, convinced him to then pay out $25 million of the company's money out to this scammer. And so like, and he was aware that there's something wrong, but the fakes were so intentional. He was on with the CFO. And I've actually been talking to some of our founders as well who have been getting impersonated as well. This is just getting fully rampant on Telegram. If you're on Telegram, be very careful. There's a lot of people that are imitating your voice really easily now. If you have any content on the internet, it's very easy to do.
This is another push for in-person.
Oh, yeah. If that's not a call for in-person, I don't know what is.
Let's go back to in-person gatherings. In-person.
Yeah, so if you're growing, if you're out there with any digital platform, just be careful what content you're doing. Just ask. Maybe just ask.
So do we need to come up with code words?
Yeah, we were talking about internally. There's got to be some
words.
Signatures you do, some handshake you do that only you and that person know.
Hezekiah, 1, 2, 3. Okay, yeah.
Safe words. Yeah.
Safe words.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's crazy. I think it's like, it's exciting where this world is going, but it's also a little bit, if you're not fully aware and you're not really learning what's happening right now, you will be a victim of the change that's happening right now.
Wow.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, it's a wild world. Development, is accelerating.
Yeah.
world is sometimes you feel like you're ahead, sometimes you feel like you're catching up.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You ever do that? You ever feel like, oh, man, I'm so ahead of the curve, and then, oh, no, I'm so far behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now more than ever, I feel like things are advancing so much. It's funny because after one of our podcasts, you guys were talking about how important deeper connections was.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of building out an app for basically a Rolodex that's powered with AI. So you input information with people that you meet,
yep,
little snippets, and then AI can then take that and give you suggestions for how to maintain these deeper connections. Because I think a lot of things that happen right now is that. But then I thought about it more. Is it really cool, or does that lessen the deeper connection because that content is generated? And the reason I say that is because LinkedIn, I think there's a Chrome extension basically for you to generate like replies to messages and all this kind of stuff. And I saw somebody going through just replying to all of these LinkedIn messages with auto-generated, like, oh, congratulations, or, oh, it's great that you're doing this. And they're like a little bit more sophisticated to what the post was about. And then it's just going to be spam everywhere across all your stuff. And so does it lessen the deeper connection? This is like a nice tool, but then I was like, oh, I don't know if it ruins what you guys are trying to gain.
Well, I mean, now you're making an argument for, is, you know, recording a Rune's birth date in my calendar authentic or not?
Mm.
No, because I want to know, oh, it's Rune's birthday. Mm-hmm. I'm going to shoot you a text.
Yeah.
Whether you think I just remembered or I saw it on my calendar, mm-hmm, that doesn't matter. The fact that I reached out.
Yeah.
And I think that if I was prompted as a reminder, hey, connect with a Rune, because my authentic position is I want a deeper connection with a Rune.
Right.
But my memory and the chaos of my life might not afford me to do that with the capacity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that these are the superpowers that are helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm excited for the element of augmented reality to maybe expand the way that our brain works, you know, and playing around with Apple Vision Pro just a little bit. The ability to be able to overlay multiple screens on top of actual reality, you know, zoom back into immersive reality and things like that and be able to multitask. Mm-hmm. Actually, the visualization of it and the immersive experience, I do feel like my brain works in a different way, right? Where I see this message, I'm watching this video, I have Slack up, I have email and all that type of stuff. And it's kind of like why people have multiple screens when you're a developer like you, right? Is because just, oh, okay, cool. This helps me actually be more productive. Mm-hmm. In the same way, I do think there's an unlock there with augmented reality as well, you know?
I agree. I think by nature, we're reactive as humans.
Yeah.
We react to what's in front of us. Mm-hmm. We react to what's in our immediate vicinity. So to become proactive, we need a reactive element.
Mm-hmm.
So a reactive element might be a reminder. It might be a force function. And then I can be proactive as a force function of reactive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what your app would produce is, I think it would become negative if it did the message for you.
Okay, that's what I was thinking initially.
Okay.
To automate some of that.
And then Arun comes, hey man, thanks for that birthday message.
Right, you don't even know.
Yeah, bud. No, when was that again? You know,
right.
I think that does take the human element out of it. But I think if it's, the goal is to create deeper connection, but I have to make the connection.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so it gives you kind of like, so don't take that step of automating it because you need that kind of step there. But it's suggestions and you can kind of go through and, okay, this makes sense.
Because I like proactive people.
Yeah, okay.
So I would rather someone try and go, hey, can I get into your calendar? Mm-hmm. Oh, love to.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than go, hey, you haven't talked to me in 6 months. Like, oh, man, like just all you have to do is reach out, you know. So it's forcing people to be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I like the embracing of technology in that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I love your guys' take on this. Do you guys still believe in handwriting your notes?
Oh, interesting.
Like, actually, when you're taking notes, you're in a meeting, handwriting your notes?
Mm. I personally haven't done that, and I can't even remember how long.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then I the other day, one of my staff was, like, doing that. And then I was just like, wow, that is so much more inefficient. Because now I want that in Slack, and you have to retype that up. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like,
I thought you were going some complete, oh, wow, that's so nice that you were going to go there.
That's like, such an artist at work.
No, that's inefficient, right?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I don't even want to type it.
I do.
Oh, really?
I'm a to-do list guy.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah.
So I do a daily to-do list on paper. I don't finish until I've crossed
them all off. No, when you're sermon prepping, though, do you go straight digital?
Or no, I go straight paper.
Really?
Wow. So I box.
Okay.
But I've got a very unique sermon process. I map boxes because I'm mapping a story and an end. And then once I've done conceptual, then I take it to computer.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, and like at this point, like the more everything is becoming even more digital. So I'm like, now I don't even type. Now I just record and have it auto transcribe and then auto summarize. So like everything is
with Neuralink. With Neuralink, we just think.
Now we just think. I don't even have to move. Yeah, I'm just gonna be.
But my worry with that is, I think chaotic. I've got so many thoughts. I need to order them on paper.
Yeah.
So then I get that's what I want
to say. That's gonna be what it is, huh? Like you're just gonna be able to. You're gonna have Neuralink with the Apple Vision Pro, and when you think you're gonna have all these boxes,
it's just gonna be chaos.
You're gonna visualize
boxes,
your
boxes are popping up. Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. I mean, I think who knows where we're gonna be able to go with that, right?
Because there's so many parts of our brain. I feel like we haven't unlocked. I think that's part of what I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Right? Is unlocking new parts of our brain. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen on Apple TV. It's an original Drops of God.
No.
It's all about wine, but it's about this savant. She grew up with one of the best kind of wine connoisseurs in the world. And he taught her at a very young age how to smell, how to distinguish different smells, mint, lavender, leather, you know, all these different smells. And it was like this hardcore training that she did when she was very, very young. And now in adult age, because there was like this kind of trauma period where she wasn't doing it, but she's unlocking it again. And Apple does a really good job of illustrating what's happening in her brain, right? So when she's smelling the wine, this explosion that's happening in her brain where she's going through the different file cabinets and pulling out that smell that she knows how to distinguish, right? And these are skills that certain people have honed in, but it's because they've just unlocked a certain piece of our brain. Like we all have it. It's just we haven't honed it in.
Right.
Right. That's why, you know, you can tell the difference between somebody that really knows wine and doesn't because of their palate's not as developed. Right. But so everybody has that palate to an extent.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it developed or is it a cataloging? You know, because Kira's really great with literally we'll go wine tasting and they're like, what does it smell like? And I'm like, grape. But Kira's picking out peach and she's picking out clay, you know, whatever it is. And I'm just like, and they're like, yes, yes. And I just throw a word out, I throw out asparagus, you know what I mean? They're like, no. But you know what I mean? Like, I thought we were just getting creative. But like, she is dialed with her cataloging.
Yeah.
And I'm smelling the same things. I just didn't have a reference point.
No, that's what I'm saying. That catalog I'm saying is like, it's part of the way that our brain's organized. And it's just honing that in. It's tapping that in. And I think naturally, probably we all have different ways that our brains make connections.
Yeah.
Right? Some people are just very visual people. They have kind of photographic type memory. Some people have the scent, you know, dialed in a lot more. But all of that, I think, I'm not a neuroscientist, but I'm pretty sure is connected to our ability to unlock portions of our brain.
Oh, no, I 100% agree. But I wonder now, as you were saying that, if we lose some of that because we won't have to experience a lot of this because a lot of this is just available through new, like, technologies that come around. Like, how many people need to then identify different smells and might not go through that experience to learn that because now you have a tool that does it for you?
Well, let me take you this one. On Sunday, when I was preaching with the Vision Pro, I took us to Yosemite. And it was amazing. Like even on the screen, but in the Vision Pro, you literally like, I'm
right.
here.
Right.
Now, for someone who's been to Yosemite a bunch of times, I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm there. Will we get to the point where we don't feel like we have to go and experience the real thing because the prosthetic thing is just as amazing?
My wife will yell at me for this, but I've been saying this for like a long time. She came from Australia here.
Yep.
She probably visited San Francisco maybe 2 to 3 times, and I didn't show her the Golden Gate Bridge. Because like in my mind, if you're going to go do something, it's got to be an experience. Like, you know, if you're going to go, there's got to be some activity plus that, not just go see it. I'm like, if you go, you could just see this on Google Images. You could just pull it up and you could put on a cardboard or, you know, Google, at that time, Google Cardboard, and you could watch it and, you know, an immersive experience. But I actually think that's going to happen. Yeah. I think there's going to be a world where you don't need to go just see something if you're not doing something in the area and you can get that same kind of experience.
Right. And how many people could just put on the Vision Pro and go, oh, yeah, I've been to Yosemite. You haven't really, but you've been there virtually.
Right.
But it's a very similar experience.
Yeah.
But what you are missing is when you're in Yosemite, that pine smell.
Yeah.
Those visceral experiences that you don't just get in the escape of a visual.
And it's interesting. I do think that there's this whole visual, right? And then people are pursuing this physiological now too, right? In this era where we're pretty comfortable, right? There's this whole movement of cold plunges, right? And I did one of these for the first time a couple months ago with a mutual friend of ours. And it was just so funny because I dipped in. It was like 42 degrees. That's it was cold, man. It was cold. It was my first time. Mm-hmm. And I go in and he's coaching me through. He's like, our bodies are meant to struggle. It doesn't get harder than this. Unlock the, you know, he's like coaching me through. He's like, we're meant to suffer.
It's like,
he's like made it spiritually suffer with Christ. And he's like, I'm just like, shut up. I'm so cold right now. And I think I'm catching the flu. Like, this is just like, I felt sick after, mm-hmm. but it's funny because, there are some physiological benefits, mm-hmm. Cause I've done it a couple of times since then where it unlocks something. Mm-hmm. I feel like neurologically.
Cerebrally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cerebrally. Yeah.
Wow.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, I can think about is get out. That's all I could think when I was doing it. Like, just get out. And it's literally fighting the natural instincts to just get out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I had to like literally tell my brain, no, you're staying in.
Yes.
Because my body's like, just get out now.
And I think that's part of the science behind mm-hmm. it, right? Yeah. Like, part of it is like, okay, if you do that as the first thing that you do, you can do any other hard thing.
Yeah.
So there's a mental, there's a physical, definitely. And there's a mental component.
Mm-hmm. I get that, but I'm wondering what is a good trigger of fight or flight?
Mm.
Do you know that I'm turning off?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Because in a setting like that, if I dull my flight sense,
good question.
Am I actually dulling my sense of safety?
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree with that because mm-hmm. I do think there's going to be this evolution, mm-hmm. right, of people realizing that they're like killing their dopamine glands.
Yeah, mm. right.
right. It's kind of like if you're a glutton. Let's just take that as an mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. If you're a glutton and you're just every day you're eating caviar, that caviar is not going to taste as
good.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So there is this idea, and that's why I feel like, you know, you are just in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a sense of yin and yang, mm-hmm. Eastern philosophies, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's not like what we subscribe to religiously, but there is this idea of balance mm-hmm. and understanding that, hey, there is a balance to these things. There's a season to these things. Mm-hmm. You want to ebb and flow with that.
Oh, for mm-hmm. sure. I think our society and technology has kind of got to this point where there's just this dopamine drip of like content that you get.
Constantly.
And it's like
yeah.
everything is a scroll. Everything is new. Everything is go. And you become desensitized to what actually can
for sure.
fill you.
Yeah.
And so like you have to do these things where now it's like, maybe I need a cold plunge, like give myself, my body some like,
exactly.
some like awakening to be yeah. like, okay, now I can do something else.
It's interesting, right? Because, even walking down a long hallway, like here at the church, we've got this long, super long mm-hmm. hallway. I'm walking from one end up this end down to the overflow office and I've got like about 30 seconds to check something on my phone.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just walking from point A to point B visually,
no.
I got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Let me search something.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's like that constant, like imagine just sitting on a bus or a plane and just sitting.
Ugh.
Thinking, mm-hmm. we need to be watching a movie. We need to be connecting to the internet.
Yeah.
We need to be, you know, answering emails.
Right.
It's literally a nonstop dopamine
yeah.
hit of fill that time, use that time, be effective. Here's the question that I've got in this. What is the space of, you know, this old word musing? Just mm. musing.
Oh,
just
yeah.
just mm. thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get that space?
We need that.
Where do you get that?
We need that.
That space, just that freedom to think
mm-hmm.
and allow thought to just permeate rather than fill it with answers, questions, blah, 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 and getting inspiration from everybody else.
Yeah.
But do we just have time to think about concepts?
So good.
I think concepts of God,
mm.
concepts of creation, concepts about our spirituality, mm-hmm. concepts about who do I want to be in this world?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of legacy do I want to leave? And I think sometimes the chaos actually can be solved by just thinking moments.
Mm.
I love that.
That's really good.
It's a good word. I mean, be still and know that I am God.
That's right? Exactly right.
It's a principle.
Mm-hmm. It's a principle.
You know, and we, you know, you got to schedule it. You got to be intentional about it. But finding those moments, I think it's so key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I recently put a thing out where I tried to give phrases for people. And for me, it was no Bible, no breakfast. This
yeah,
is just a
good.
Habit
I
for me
that.
That I'm like, I've just made a discipline because I like breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
But let me hold that back and mm-hmm. put a priority of Bible.
Good.
And it's become a principle. What if it's like we could come up with one that's about just taking time to think, you know, be still before email or whatever it is,
yeah.
you know, like there is
no,
like
totally.
These things that we actually, we do a leverage play for me to get that reward, because the dopamine hit can come from checking emails, getting ahead, feeling like I'm productive. They're all dopamine hits, but for me to get that reward, what if I did something that's beneficial before I get there?
It's beautiful. Mm.
Yeah, I think you got to sit in that as well, because I think even before the cold plunge, I think a lot of like one of the motivational strategies was I'm going to make a to-do list. You put some easy stuff at the top and you cross that off to start your day.
Success.
Like make your bed or like, I don't know, brush your teeth. And those are like the ones that you hit. And then you just naturally feel like I've accomplished. So now I can go accomplish harder tasks.
Yes.
But that would be really interesting to say the thing I do every day to start the day is maybe not a cold shower. It's I'm just going to have some time to think.
Yeah, well, I was talking to our staff this morning and someone asked, what patterns did you set in your teenage years that have helped you with capacity in your later years?
That's good.
And you know, I found that disciplines are difficult to do, but once something becomes a habit, because we're creatures of habit and we have habits, a habit is an automatic discipline, good or bad.
Yeah.
Okay. So my habit, if I can actually do something disciplined enough where it's a habit of mine now is waking up at 5 a.m. It's a habit. It's not even, Kira gets annoyed because I don't even set the alarm and we could be traveling. I still wake up at 5 a.m. And it's just become so automatic and it actually is now not work. So I wonder what good habits you could form that were maybe start as a discipline, but now it's just habitual.
It's beautiful. I love that.
I think there's a superhuman hack, right?
That is.
That is.
And
that
it's cool because you can just do it yourself. You don't need a brain computer.
I don't need a Neuralink.
Yeah, you just have to train
yourself.
Need a $4,000 but that's the
Apple
issue
Vision
with
Pro.
People. It's like, and especially this generation, lazy, right?
Yeah.
Why would I do it when I can just get something plugged in my head? So, all right, well, that's a good place to end it. Before we go, this is going to be dropped right before FOCON.
Let's go. Get
do you want to do one last pitch? I know there's some new people been added. If you don't, follow Hype Network. Follow Pastor Adam, Pastor Vance. There's new people being added to this. The panel looks incredible.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Last pitch.
My gosh, Chiwa Chen. He is the managing partner, founder of Good Water Capital, probably one of the most exciting venture firms.
Oh, for
in
sure.
The Silicon
Doing
Valley.
Great things.
Incredible. I mean, he was part of teams that invested into Facebook, TikTok when it was called ByteDance, Spotify, right? Yep. Mackie Saturday, he invented the brand for Instagram. Nancy Duarte, legend, Silicon Valley legend.
Yep.
She has coached some of the top CEOs, founders in the Silicon Valley on how to do presentations, her presentation design company. Jensi Jacob, he goes to our church, but also executive producer, has produced movies that have been in thousands of theaters across the world.
Dino Rizzo,
the scale master himself, alongside Pastor Adam, talking about how to scale your organization. Both of these people have planted many, many churches around the world. I mean, you know, if you are an entrepreneur, creator, maker, innovator, if you are a pastor with an entrepreneurial mindset and you're not at FlowCon, you're going to have FOMO. I'm just telling you right now.
And we originally thought this was going to be like a boutique kind of experience. We thought, let's just plan for 200 people. We blew that out.
Out of the water.
And then we had a leadership lunch on the Thursday that we thought, let's just keep it to 50 people. Mm-hmm. That sold out so fast.
So fast.
We doubled it.
Yeah.
And now we're sold out. We've got 100
people.
And the
only reason we're selling it out is because we're trying to plan for breakfast.
Right.
Like good stewards.
Right.
And it's just,
we want everyone to have a piece of bacon. You know?
It's crazy. But it's going to be fun. More than just the content, we say one connection of your breakthrough. Maybe the content unlocks a connection for you, but more so, we have intentionally designed spaces and in the schedule times where you all can cross connect. And that's really our heart, is that you find somebody that can unlock something. And if we all come in with a kingdom mindset, leaning in, looking to give, looking to serve, I think something special. Somebody asked me, what's the win of FlowCon? What's the win of these hype sessions? I said, you know what? In the next decade, when we, read the headlines, maybe on our augmented reality devices, we see people, the next Apple, Tesla, Meta, Google, but kingdom minded. And they're going to be like, man, I made a connection at this one conference in the heart of the Silicon Valley and it changed my whole orientation by why I'm pursuing business. That would be success.
Yeah. I mean, the word that I feel going into FlowCon, and this may end up being a theme for future FlowCons, is unlock.
Good.
It's an unlock. It's getting in an environment. There may be an idea that unlocks something, or it might be a connection that unlocks something. But you need to be in environments that unlock you.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's going to be one key element.
Well, I'm excited for everybody that is able to attend. Cheers, guys. Great episode.
Bless.